Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Hi, I'm Sarah Smith. If you're the type of person that goes to Liberty as other people would go on safari, and the fact that John Lewis doesn't have a funeral service makes you fret, Sarah Smith cleaning cloths are for you. Sarah Smith, available from Sainsbury's, for the posher washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
This week's episode is sponsored by Vitel. They provide business telephone systems, latest technology, customised and tailored to suit business requirements, remote management and configuration. Their selling points are that they lower costs by removing line rentals, increase flexibility and fit in with the business, rather than making the business fit in with their phone system. They're based in mainland UK.
For further information, email info@vitel.co.uk
or call 033 008 1388.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that centred at Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the Edwardian chaise lounge, that is Royfield Brown, and with me I have the moth-eaten deck chair, that is
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of our half-landing, folks, is you. Now, today's Dumpty Dum comes from the Snowdrop Posse in Shaftesbury from last week. And thank you, everybody, who tweeted me pictures of snowdrops and were just bowled over by the fact I had no idea what these little pretty flowers were all about. And yes, I had watched tea with Mussolini, but it was a long time ago. So there you go. Thank
breakfast
you.
Breakfast was the prequel.
Yes. Ah-ha-ha. Now, Lucy... Mm-hmm. We need to stay on message because we have a review and a half which says we wander off and they're not happy. So,
right,
let's just whip through things. Keep right. So, Dumpty Dums. Yep. Someone wants to send one. How can they do that?
Do we have to speak really fast?
Yes.
Well, if you'd like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, give us a plot prediction, or get overly competitive about jam, then ring us on 02030313105 or leave us a message on SpeakPipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups, to Sarah Smith for sponsoring us, to Shambridges for her amazing voices, and to Derek for the loan in the back bedroom. Derek is still recovering from Joe Grundy's birthday party. He decided to have a go at the line dancing, but he gave it up when Auntie Cardboard couldn't grasp his travelling Applejack.
You're only good at line dancing.
Can you imagine me line dancing? For a start, I can't tell.
Reckon you've got the hips for it, Lucy. And you know what? Those hips don't lie.
Even doing aerobics was one of the most terrifying moments of my life, because he said that they said, right, go left. You know, they do all this grapevine malarkey and, you know, if she's going da 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 to the left and I'm going right, and I look up and there's 30 women in lycra coming thundering towards me. It was bloody terrifying. So
that,
no,
that
I am
to me
not.
Sounds like my ultimate dream. But anyway, on this week's episode, we have calls from Naked Fingers, who's crossed with Associated Press, Steve, who thinks Rob is going to be hit up the arse. Join the queue of the people that wanted to be hit up the arse there, Steve. Cosmo, is that Steve Bye-Bye? Bonkers, Steve.
Yes.
Oh, fantastic. Right, Cosmo, who thinks Kirsty's up the clanger. Fiona, who thinks Toby's getting bored. Jojo Sexy Heels, who's been working the figures. Witherspoon, who wants to know what Alan was thinking. And goddess diva who wants to know who's abducted Peggy. But first, before the caller in us, before the review from hell, it's Lucy V. Freeman's week in Ambridge.
We began the week with Clary and Susan thinning down mayonnaise. It's food, not Tippex, for crying out loud. This was in aid of Joe Grundy, 95, who had his birthday with horrible food and some wildly inappropriate music at Grange Farm, where he belongs and where he's had so many of his birthdays with horrible food and inappropriate music. Caroline was at the party, still doing her po-faced Lady Bountiful impression until Joe said he felt he might live forever, and Caroline came over a bit faint and lay down on the terribly comfortable Edwardian chaise longue that Joe had conveniently left in the pond. NB, chaise longues are never comfortable. They are like sitting on a horsehair park bench. And apparently Neville Booth has come out of his shell and won't shut up. He's like a different man. So that's another new boss who got used to. Oliver was trying to delay giving the Grundys a proper tenancy agreement rather than the one the Grundys drew up themselves, which said, Joe can live here until he dies and storing his dead body in the loft does count. Oliver ran away from horrible Auntie Caroline and went to paddle in the Grey Gables swimming pool instead, while she shouted, I can still see you, Oliver, when he hid under an inflatable hippo. The Grundys invited him to their cider party and Caroline said he couldn't go as he hadn't done his homework. So Joe said if Oliver made his bed and did as much of his homework as he could, then Joe would call for him and see if he would come out for a small play after tea. Mm-hmm. So he did. Bless. We must also celebrate with a clap for Pat. A heavily ironic clap. Her daughter, newly released from a physical prison and a mental prison in which she was made to feel incapable, announces that she wants to return to driving, and the first thing her mother says is, oh dear darling, do you think you should? Way to go boosting her confidence, Pat. Well done. Why not start referring to her as Little Miss Giggly? Sausage Boy and Krusty had a little chat about the chance of them bumping uglies again in the near future. It was not very convincing. No, it's fine, obviously, from Tom, but Krusty said she didn't think she'd be able to fit him in again. Tom said he completely understood and went outside and tried to run himself over with his own van. Adam's self-flagellating about his ridiculous behaviour and has got the heave-ho from Ian. At least he's not trying to blame Ian, Jennifer, Brexit, Donald Trump or Zika virus. Just his own wandering willy. The silly. He says he wants to go a bit deeper, but I rather think that's what got him into this trouble in the first place. Josh has decided to start another business. Mushrooms. They're tricky. Mushrooms. Growing them involves keeping them in the dark and shoveling shit on them, which as a technique didn't work brilliantly well for Adam this week, it has to be said. Poor old David's feeling his age and nothing else, judging by the stroppy throws every time any of his children show the slightest interest in anyone of the opposite sex. Just because you're not getting any, David, you cannot stop the raging flood of hormones emanating from your offspring. They are teenagers. It is like trying to clean up an avalanche with a dustbuster. Give it up. David decided to divert his annoyance into mushroom research because clearly he has that kind of time and couldn't wait to say, you see, Josh, it won't work, your idea, so you can't do it. Ha ha, you can't, it won't work. I know that and you don't because I'm old. And no, I may not be able to seduce 17-year-old girls behind the village hall, but I know about mushrooms and now I'm going away to have a little cry and howl my defiance at the moon. Usha heard us all shouting vigorously about what the hell she was doing letting a hideous specimen like Rob remain in her house. The vicar, as befits a man of the cloth, suggested thinking very carefully before she renounced evil. Of course, he suggested that Usha should forgive Rob because he hadn't actually done anything to her. What? Harold Shipman didn't actually kill my granny, but I still wouldn't have him round for dinner. Emma told Piggy she felt bad for helping Titchy Knob with Henry. You must reproach yourself, said Piggy. After all, I practically gave him my life savings and a kidney. She cheered herself up. I'd like to visit Febreze in Felpersham. He's a terrible cutter, but it does smell nice. Jennifer and Jill are having a jam-off. It's all very cloak and dagger. A jam dagger. Jill is putting in her blackcurrant and Jennifer is doing a herbal lay and patriarchy chutney. Justin the idiot, entirely unrealistically, has confirmed that Titchy Knob will take up his job at Damara. You do realise, Justin, that you've just signed up for a no-nookie block from Lillian forever. You can forget nosing round her cul for the foreseeable. And if Lillian agrees with Justin's decision, then she is not the woman we know and love. Anyway, to happier things. Happy birthday, Joe, 95. Long may your Johns be. The end.
Oh, Oh, I enjoyed that this week. Well done, Freeman.
Very good.
Now, a jam dagger. Is that a jagger?
Yeah. It is. It would be, wouldn't it?
It would.
A blackcurrant jagger.
What were your standout bits of the last week in Nambridge?
I do like Oliver sort of sheepishly liking the Grundys while Caroline's wishing that he'd sort of, you know, be a bit more brutal with them. They just run rings around him, don't they? And when Joe gave him a hug as well, that was quite sweet.
Well, he kind of believes in noblesse oblige, doesn't he? He's got a whole dollop of that going on in his psyche, and he does just kind of like them. And I just thought the interplay between the three of them, if you include Joe, was just kind of brilliant in the last week. Absolutely lovely.
When they said you could come around and have a pre-tasting of the cider, and he sounded genuinely thrilled. He said, "Yes, and he was sort of like, well, hey, you know, I was thinking, don't tell Caroline, she won't like it. And also, I thought that was a bit bewildering, the Usha and Alan scene, when Alan seemed almost genuinely as if he was trying to not condone what Rob had done, but, you know, he played devil's advocate slightly more successfully than one would wish a vicar to do, I feel. But anyway, there we are.
I don't know, isn't kind of Christianity all about forgiveness?
Well, there's forgiveness and then there's forgiveness. I mean, you know, is there not a line?
Well, I suppose that when you're an out-and-out evil sod like Rob, the ultimate kind of people to defend you are either your kith and kin and or some variant of compassionate religion, which says that we need to kind of... I hate using the word understand with Rob, but the script writers have been doing a masterful job in tugging on some people's kind of heartstrings in terms of, here is a man who doesn't have access to his son.
Yeah.
It is working with some people. And I know I shouldn't, but I will just jump through to yesterday's episode. You know, there is Rob kind of struggling with little Gax nappy. And you know that whatever that evil git is feeling, he's truly feeling it, you know. And why are we having these scenes? Why did we have the Ursula and her evil husband and their kind of backstory, if not to see how somebody who becomes a monster like Rob is created? Yeah. So, but anyway.
Yeah.
Anyway. Don't be repetitive. So, Luce. Why don't we hit those phone lines and see what the caller inners across the globe think of the last week's Ambridge action.
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Who's first?
Naked Fingers.
Hello, Dumpty Dummers. It's Naked Fingers here. First time caller in error. And I'm a designated Vicky Tucker, apparently. I know that sounds like some kind of obscene Archer's rhyming slang, but no, I am a Vicky Tucker. I'm also a caterer, so I can tell you a few things about the holes in the storylines for catering and how they serve food at the ball or gay grey balls, you know, all that kind of nonsense. Some of it doesn't ring true, and I guess it's the same for farmers and lawyers and whatever other profession and storyline that they bring up in The Archers, that I suppose it has to be dramatised, and therefore you have to cut corners and you have to make it dramatic rather than true to life. I'm not calling in because of that anyway. I'm calling in to say thank you to Roy Field for all those lovely things he said about me two episodes ago. I've yet to catch up with the longest one ever, so I might be calling in after that as well. And also, I'd like to complain about Associated Press and their Twitter feed, which absolutely spoiled the verdict for me, because they tweeted it and it came up on my Twitter feed in Las Vegas, and really knocked the wind out of my sails, because, you know, I was looking forward to listening to the verdict, but took all the surprise out of it for me. So Thank you very much, Associated Press. Right, mustache. Got to go to the loo. You know what my bladder's like.
Do you know what, Naked Fingers? I don't want to worry you, but you do sound a bit like Rob. Like a much nicer, jollier Rob, and a lot funnier, but your voice is quite similar, and it's quite odd. Yes, there were quite a few spoilers, and I was on BBC Breakfast wittering on about the Archers on the Monday after the verdict.
Mm-hmm.
And I
like the way you just casually just dropped that in.
Most people know anyway because of Twitter. But I was walking my dog the next day.
Yeah, but your mum didn't know because of Twitter. Your mum knew because you told her.
Yes, because I told her. It would have nearly killed her if she'd turned BBC Breakfast on and there was me. That would have really frightened her. I was walking my dog on Epping Forest the next morning.
What did you wear?
What did I wear?
Yeah.
A pink shirt.
But it's a big deal. You're going to go on national TV. You're going to think about your outfit, aren't you? And don't just say you just threw something on. Don't come off with that faux modesty. Did you have your hair done before?
No. Jenny Murray had false eyelashes on.
Did she?
Yeah. Mm. Other things as well, not just false eyelashes, but, you know.
What, other things were false?
Certainly not. Anyway, I was walking my dog the next morning in Epping Forest, and a woman came up to me who I knew and said, "Well, thank you," she said. And I said, "Sorry?" And I thought my dog had done something or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And she said, "I'd managed all weekend to avoid the spoilers." And she said, "And then my husband was watching BBC Breakfast News, and he said, 'Oh, look, isn't that woman that you walk the dog with?' And I came in, and there you were, wishing on about the verdict." She said. I ruined it for her. Sorry, woman on the walk.
Oh, I ruined it for somebody with the title that I put on Dum-de-dum that week. Yes. Yeah, someone had to give me a virtual slap on the Twitters. Royfield, you ruined it.
Robert Wilson's giving Associated Press a slap. The thing is, it did become kind of it became a story. The story of the story became a story, didn't it? You know, the whole it wasn't. Yeah, it did become news, and people listening to it, and the listening figures and everything. It all became news, so it was very, very hard to avoid the verdict.
Absolutely.
But I'm sorry if we ruined it for anybody. Sorry. Next. Bye-bye, Steve.
Bye-bye, baby goodbye.
Good afternoon, Dumpty Dum. I'm just about to deliver the sprog off to university. It's Steve here, by the way. Thank you for your kind words last week. Swines. Yeah, a couple of a plot prediction. I think that Usher is going to kick Rob out of the cottage. I think Helen and Jess are going to pursue a criminal case for rape against Rob. And the culvert gate is going to come back to hit him. And he's going to be so desperate that he's going to do something really bad in the village. It's going to be like one of the Emmerdale plane crashes. It's going to be like Rob going around with a shotgun just shooting everybody. You know, a zombie apocalypse in Ambridge. Nah. It's not going to happen, is it, really? It'd be nice, though. It's a good sort of spin-off video game. Rob and Zombie Apocalypse in Ambridge. I think I'll bag the rights to that before you buggers start building a game. Anyway, that's me. So, definitely. Rob's going to go totally apeshit and do something stupid. And it's all going to be a bit sort of dramatic. So, that's me. Anyway, off up to Birmingham. And I'll see you later. Bye-bye. Love you. Bye-bye. Mwah. Bye-bye. Mwah. Bye-bye.
Is he still bonkers this week?
He is bonkers.
Is he angry with us?
He says we're sods for calling him bonkers.
Well, no. We're just like straight up and honest people. We just couldn't let that go. Could be loose.
Not really. Mm. He's still hanging on for Culvert Gate.
Mm.
I've got so confused now about... I've got all my Eastern Europeans muddled up. Pavel was the one that shagged Adam, was he?
Yes.
Stefan was the one who Rob said had gone rushing back to wherever it was.
Stefan had basically blabbed to David, hadn't he? And Rob found out.
Yes. Why has David not done anything about this then?
Heaven only knows. And I can't remember which subcommittee he was part of for it to be in his remit.
Yeah. Under his purview.
Exactly.
Maybe culverts were not under his purview at that moment in time. Mm. You can tell I've been doing a lot of conference calls today, can't you? well, yes, I am. I don't know whether they're going to let it just... whether the whole Robin Helen storyline is going to just sort of slow down now. Because I think some people are still waiting for the big thing that is going to reveal Rob's horribleness in general, not just in terms of his treatment of Helen, whether or not there's going to be a bigger story behind that, which could be the culvert. It could be Shula talking about the Hunt Sab thing. And then Steve suggests that will Jess and Helen bring a case against him for rape? I am not sure whether. If he does that, you know, I think it's incredibly hard when you have had a child as a result of rape.
Mm. Yes. Looking at this from another point of view, if you are the new editor type person coming in, you're either going to want to do one of two things. You're either going to say, I want this to be over with. So that then would lean towards the, there's going to be some other big reveal and then he'll run out of town. Or you say, you know what, I need to have my own my own storylines, etc. So he'll die by 1,000 paper cuts, so to speak. And I'm slightly erring on the side of the latter, not the former, because Usher has basically, you know, revoked his tenancy, hasn't she?
Yeah. So where's he going to live now, do you reckon?
Don't know, Luce. But I'm presuming it's not going to be in Ambridge, unless, but they could just remind us or just invent that there is, you know, number three, the green or whatever. You know, so that is entirely possible.
43, the green is free. Oh, really?
Because, you know, when you actually count the amount of regular characters on The Archers, that doesn't make a village. You know, that barely makes a lane, a street. Yeah. So there are other people other than Nathan Booth and the Button Twins that are silent that kind of make up this village. So they could just invent some other address that they kind of move to. Though it might make sense for the believability of the drama that he moves to Pennyhasset. So he's next door. So he comes back
rather than he's just wandering around. Yeah,
in the next door village or something or another.
But
I tell you the one thing which I did kind of pick up on last week was talk of therapy and counselling with Ian and Adam.
Yes.
Though, you know, Ian kind of poo-pooed it, which I wouldn't have thought necessarily that Ian would have been so damning on that.
But I think Ian is absolutely furious. And he doesn't want... He wants Adam to actually sound contrite. And he doesn't.
Hmm.
Because that's afterwards. You go. You have the fury, and you have the plate smashing, and the get that out of my house, and blah 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 blah. And then the person comes back and says, "Well, I really want to stay together. So should we think about counselling?" You would just go, "Yes, I know. Wasn't it awful? Anyway, should we have counselling and should we make it all right again?" You know, and you kind of think, "No, Adam just does not sound. He sounds slightly annoyed that he's been caught out." And slightly irritated at Ian still being cross with him. That's how he sounds. He does not sound sorry, not to me.
I don't know if I'll agree with that. I forget which episode it was, whether it was Tuesday or Wednesday, but he sounded properly kind of cut up and frustrated and just generally exasperated. That's the word I was searching for, exasperated with Ian. And I need somebody with a big brain that understands the psychology of human beings, either you or Witherspoon, to explain to me Ian's position in all of this, because Ian knew this. So is it just the fact that it's come out and Adam hasn't said to him this thing happened before it came out? I have a lizard brain when it comes to these things. I'm very simplistic, and, you know, things to me are very black and white. And I just find Ian going ballistic now and kicking Adam out now, considering he's known for months, confusing. I'm not saying it's unbelievable, it's just confusing to me. But I have a lizard brain. So,
but that's exactly what Cosmo said in his call as well.
Oh, we best go on to Cosmo then.
Yeah.
Hi to all Dumpty Dummers everywhere. Cosmo here. I'm recording early to beat the deadline. My listening goes back to the 50s and I cannot remember who appeared then as I was very young. I want to consider some fallout from the recent anti-neutron bomb, dangerous to buildings but leaves people standing. I cannot comprehend Ian's attitude to Adam. He has known about Adam's infidelity since before the wedding. So why get so upset now, given he has lived and presumably ignored it for 9 months? Can you explain it, please? Also, it was the wrong lever to use in court. Ian's credibility would have been destroyed had they used his unprovoked attack on Rob in front of Bradley Wiggins. Poor court strategy by the prosecution. There are now 5 adults and 2 children living at Bridge Farm. How many of them are sleeping on sofas? I seem to recall the original John and Tom sharing a bedroom, so the place would seem to have grown. Perhaps Tom should get around to building that house on Bridge Farm land he mentioned a few years ago before Kirsty went bridezilla. And as I mentioned in last week's podcast summary, I am offering it as a certainty that Kirsty is now pregnant. In her discussion with Helen this week, she is clearly in 2 minds over Tom again. Looking forward to joining you in a few weeks, probably after we return from our next trip to the colonies, as we are visiting New England in the fall in early October. We're off to see the autumn colours. And that's under 2 minutes.
My take on it is really that, A, Ian is furious. He doesn't feel that he's been apologetic. That Adam just doesn't get it. That Adam doesn't realise. And also, I think it is partly that thing that happens, like that happened with Ruth and David, when he doesn't understand what it's like to marry into someone else's family and then go and live in the village where they live. Mm. Ian has got no family around him. Adam's got his entire family around him, and he works with them and for them. And Adam has got people he can confide in. The only person Ian could confide in was Helen, and that was knocked on the head fairly smartish by Rob. And then to walk it, to be aware that the entire family is talking about it and referring to you as poor old whoever, is just, you know, people can put up with an awful lot of bad behaviour from their other half, but they will not be put up with being humiliated. I think that's where, for many, many people, that's where the line is. You know, if it's between you and them, then fine. But the fact that everyone else is chipping in, Lillian's talking about it, you know, he's very aware that everybody's, you know, Jennifer's involved. Jennifer's beating off to Peggy and saying, oh, we've had some bad news, blah, 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 blah. Just to know that you are the one that's been cheated on and everybody knows is hideous.
Mm. Well, that's the only way it makes any kind of sense to me. And yeah, I think you're completely right. You know, generally what goes on between a couple in their own relationship, definitely if it's bad, you know, you kind of want it kind of kept there. You might have the, you know, you might ask somebody for a little bit of wise counsel every now and then, but ultimately, you know, you are then informing other people as to actually what's going on, and you're in control of the flow of information, so to speak.
Yeah.
And what's tripped Ian up is the fact that it's come out in such a spectacular way. And then this was not helped by the fact that, of course, the whole village is talking about the tittle-tattle around the Helen and Rob case, i.e. he's in Grey Gables, and then there's Lillian kind of blabbing, and he walks up behind her. So that must be incredibly hard. But,
and, you know, he hasn't even had Caroline around very much to talk to. He's on his Todd, and it's very, very hard when you live in the place where everybody knows that person. They've known them for decades, and you're the new boy, you know, and I don't know, it can be incredibly isolating and upsetting. And the only way you can get through it is by maintaining a greater level of dignity, maybe, than other people would feel necessary. But then to have that stripped away from you so publicly is just awful.
Two things. Number one, Todd. This is an international podcast now. We go across all seven oceans, Lucy.
Ooh.
You're going to have to explain Todd.
On his Todd?
Yes.
It means on your own.
And where's it come from?
No idea.
Well, it's some kind of rhyming slang, isn't it? But it's so far removed. On your Jack Jones would be on your own. But Todd, I don't quite understand. So you, dear listener, if you know where exactly the entomology of the expression on your Todd, where that comes from, please tweet or email into us for next week. Thank you very much, please. Now, who's next?
Next we have... Oh, no, hang on. We've got to talk about Cosmo thinks.
Oh, yes.
Cosmo thinks that Kirsty's pregnant.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that element of his call.
Honestly, women can have sex without getting pregnant. You know, it happens quite a lot.
It would make some level of sense in that we know, being astute watchers of this or listeners of this docudrama, that the Tom and Kirsty thing is due to run.
Just found it. It's a Cockney rhyming slang. On your Todd Sloan, on your own.
Todd Sloan. See,
no idea who Todd Sloan was.
Yes, because the only Todd that I know is kind of Sweeney Todd.
Yeah.
Or Todd Carthy.
Oh, he was a jockey. Todd Sloan.
Was he always last or first? Hence, he was on his own. Oh, and it's Todd Sloan. It's just rhyming slang there, isn't it?
Yeah.
Mm. A jockey when? What era?
The 1930s. He had 1870. No, he was born in 1874. He was an American jockey. Mm-hmm. Came to England. He was ridiculed and called the monkey jockey because of the way he rode. He rode very sort of hunched up and light.
Isn't that just so apt for this podcast that actually he was an American?
Yeah.
And we know that 50% of our downloads are actually now coming from the great US of A.
Oh. In his autobiography, it was called Todd Sloan by Himself. He wrote of his sadness at being abandoned by his long dead parents. I was left alone by those I have never ceased to grieve for. Isn't that sad?
Very.
It's poignant that his name should have become synonymous with solitude. He died alone of cirrhosis in 1933.
Oh, crumbs. What, he drunk himself into oblivion?
Yep. Anyway, on with the comedy podcast. Yes.
So we were talking about Tom and Kirsty.
Yeah.
And in a proper...
Why is it...
I'm Royfield.
I know. Why is it obvious that Kirsty should be pregnant then?
No, I'm not saying that it is obvious. I'm saying it makes a certain amount of soap sense. Because all the signs are... I'm saying it makes a certain amount of sense. I'm not saying that she is. So my answer is somewhat nuanced in that way. Number one, we know that there is this... this week, one of the pieces of music when Kirsty was talking about Tom was Elvis's You're Always On My Mind.
Yeah.
And we know that those are big pointers to, you know, the emotional state, the mental state of the characters involved. So that was obviously that Tom is always on her mind. And she's admitted as such. Why did she come back to Ambridge after she was so massively humiliated? Tom has realised and has said that he made a massive mistake, etc., etc. So we're having this slow kind of madrigal of them basically slowly but surely coming together. But as she said, you know, considering what had happened with the trial, there was this great outpouring of release, shall we say, in terms of the verdict. So their ships bumped in the night. But we know there's unfinished business.
So yes.
I'm not saying that she is preggers, but it would make sense in a kind of soapy tropey way. And if you are the new person coming in, and looking at the threads of the relationships between various characters, you might just say, right, we need to make a decided turn, a very definite turn between Rob and Kirsty, and forget this kind of will they, won't they, and just cement something between them. And a little nipper, a new little archer, would absolutely do the job. And then from a kind of practical point of view, it would make sense that we're presuming that she takes no contraception, and they didn't plan this, so it would make complete and utter sense.
No. Kirsty is a very sensible woman, and she's dating, and she wouldn't just presume, we shouldn't just presume that she's not taking any...
Luce, I'm not saying that she is. I'm not saying that she isn't. I'm just saying you could argue the case in terms of build, you know, the reason why in 9 months' time.
Yeah, she's not that daft, though.
Mm. Sometimes people aren't necessarily daft, but their subconscious acts in a way that the conscious brain kind of acts against. But anyway, I'm moving into Witherspoon territory, so I'll back away. But I'm saying it would make some form of dramatic sense in terms of the two characters concerned, because we've had them get together twice before. When they first got together through the whole GM thing and the eco warriors, then after Brenda, they got it together again. The third time has to be different. What is going to be the difference? I don't know.
Okay. Oh, God, I hope not, but okay.
Who's next?
Take your point. Fiona Powell.
Hello all. Fiona Siobhan Powell here. Alas, Royfield, when it comes to Toby, I'm afraid I agree with Lucy. I've met too many Tobys not to. Men for whom it's all about the chase. It's like this. I used to have a cat named Sybil, who delighted in tormenting the little Jack Russell Terrier next door by sitting on the garden wall and dangling her tail provocatively at him. That little dog would go berserk, jumping, barking, snapping, but he could never quite reach the tail. I used to fear that on the day that he did, he'd kill Sybil. Imagine my surprise when one day I saw Sybil in the next door garden. And what was the little dog doing? Ignoring her. When the entire cat was available, he was no longer interested. I think Toby is like that. Sometime after the first breathless I love you is uttered, Toby will become bored and he'll move on to the next chase. And Pip will be left wondering what the hell happened. Poor Pip, who thinks the world turns at her behest. I think that the next few years have the potential of being rough on Pip, and I think David's parenting is partly to blame. Pip can do no wrong, Josh can do no right. By the way, Josh's crazy mushroom scheme? Not so crazy. It has potential, but he should develop it further so that down the road he could sell fancy mushroom kits for people so that they can grow their own. Last winter, quite a few people I know dropped a lot of cash on just such kits. That's me done.
Fiona Powell has got a cat called Sybil, and so have I. How exciting is that? See? She's with me on the whole Toby will clear off, Toby will become bored. And she says, she pinpoints it to when as soon as Pip says, I love you. That'll be off. Skid marks.
Considering that they've now outed their relationship to the whole village, I would say that Toby's the way that Toby's treating Pip is very different from his other conquests. So I think I am right so far. Just saying.
Okay, well, we'll see. Should we have a bet?
What do you want to bet? I'm prepared to wager.
Yeah, what?
You tell me. I don't know, what can you afford to lose, Lucy?
Nothing.
Whilst you're thinking about that, one of the reasons why I do think Toby's going to run and run, there's a little subplot, isn't there? David not liking Toby. If anything tells you this thing is going to run and run, it's going to be that. The fact that even when
it was a cheese,
exactly. Even when Toby says "Happy birthday, David Archer,"
I'm a cheese. You know,
if ever you needed pointers that this is going to run and run, it was that.
Also, she the mushroom growing kits. That is not a bad idea, actually.
Is it not?
Although bringing mushrooms into Brookfield does take away something of the drama, because the mushrooms are never likely to escape and go all over the lane, are they? Or anything like that. Alice will not be called out in the middle of the night to inject mushrooms with things. Maybe the mushroom farming is not a bad idea. This is very, very unappealing, mushroom farming.
What I do like, though, is the fact that I can't figure Josh out. That Josh is actually a little bit of a wild card. That he wants to be a farmer, but he has the kind of arrogance of youth. And
when David said, "You haven't thought this out," and he said, "No, I haven't." And you kind of quite admire that.
Exactly.
Having ideas. Don't know, because I'm 19 and I'm an idiot.
Exactly what he said, and it just stumped his dad.
Yeah.
You know, and I am absolutely warming to the character of Josh, and I hope that in this new writing tenure...
Like Kenton, but with more brains, I think.
Much more brains.
Yeah.
And actually, he has a certain amount of kind of insight in terms of business and in terms of people to a degree, though he's very precocious and he does enough kind of piss you off. But the whole thing, I'm still smiling on the way that he outed Toby and Pip. Yeah, I just thought that was just brilliant.
It was like I'm in trouble, so I'm going to start a small fire over here, and then everybody will be looking at that.
And then I can slope off. Exactly. So I say bravo to Josh.
Who have we got next? We have
Before we go on to JoJo. Right.
I just realised I've lost an email. Where have I put that?
Well, you find that email whilst I fill. You go look. Right.
Yeah.
So you've got a cat called Sybil. And so does Fiona in Pennsylvania. So this is an appropriate time for me to remind you, dear listener, if you have a cat and they sometimes are in earshot of Dum-de-Dum and the Archers, that's a Dum-de-Mog. So why don't you go onto the Twitters or onto the Book of Face and post a picture of your cat with the hashtag Dum-de-Mog, and we'll retweet it, and it will get lots of retweets and likes because Dum-de-Dum listeners like a good pussy. Now, if you are feeling left out because you own a dog, that could be a Dum-de-Dog. So why don't you put your pooch onto Facebook or the Twitters and say the name of your dog and how long they've been listening to the Archers or even Dum-de-Dum, and that'll be our Dum-de-Dog. Now, Lucy.
Yes.
In kind of a few weeks back.
I made it.
I'm still filling. Don't worry.
It's fine. But
You've got another 30 seconds or so.
All right.
A few weeks back, I was determined to actually read out a roll call on this podcast of all the Dum-de-Dogs.
Yeah.
There's too many. It's just bonkers. There's too many. Unless you want to go through and cut and paste all those names into the script for next week, it's bonkers. But people, keep them coming. Don't stop your images of your Dum-de-Dogs doing stuff, because it's just lovely. And other Dum-de-Dum listeners like to see that type of stuff. Now, if you're feeling doubly left out because you don't have a cat, you don't have a dog, but you've got a little toddler that is forced to listen, that's a Dum-de-Diddler. So hashtag Dum-de-Diddler and whack up a little picture of your toddler looking cute, looking lovely. And you know what? We'll give that a thumbs up also. Have we given up looking for your email?
We've given it up, yes. I think I dreamt it.
All right.
I had a dream that Rob was trying to shoot me. It was horrible. I had quite a bad cold and a high temperature, and I had taken some night nurse.
Okay.
And I don't think night nurse agrees with me. And I had the most awful night's dreams, culminating in me climbing Lakey Hill.
Oh, come on, Lucy, really?
Yeah. And seeing, hiding behind a tree, and Rob saying, "I know you're there, and I can wait all night, and the second you come out, I'm going to blow your head off." And he had a gun. I was absolutely terrified. It was one of those dreams where you wake up going, like that, and you're just so glad that you're in your bed and, you know, it's not real. But the creepy feeling stayed with me for a good sort of 4 hours afterwards. I'm not having night nurse again.
I tell you, Night Nurse must have been one of the most effective product TV adverts of the 1970s.
Yeah, you still remember it. That glowing exactly. Night Nurse that came and smoothed the man's head.
Night Nurse, Milk Tray, yeah. Cinzano Bianco.
I don't remember that one.
Oh, that's with Leonard Rossiter.
I know. Oh, yeah, no, I didn't.
With, what's her name?
Joan Collins.
Joan Collins, yeah. And it was, she was always throwing... That's a little bit before your time, because you're a little bit younger than me. But no, that's one of those iconic kind of adverts.
Like which the Grange Hill sausage.
Exactly. But it doesn't quite get the props in the way that Cinzano Bianco and, like, Hovis, you know, those ads did. Oh, yeah.
Yes!
Who's next?
JoJo's Sexy Heels.
One of these days these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Hi there, Dumpty Dummers. It's JoJo's Sexy Heels here. I was talking to Cosmo the other week about the cost of tenant farming, and as he hasn't called in with a breakdown, I thought that now the Grundys are going to be staying at Grange Farm, and there was a comment that was made about they hoped they would be able to meet the rent. So I've done a bit of research and I'm going to give you some rough figures based on published rates in the Farmers Weekly, and I have rounded it down. So this is the worst possible scenario of Ed and his tractor, and yes, I know he has a bank loan to repay. The average second-hand tractor cost is about 30k. So his hourly rate would be about £25 an hour plus fuel. Agricultural workers do 43 hours a week, and since January there have been 38 weeks, so... If we take out the 3 weeks and he was culling badgers and then another 5 weeks for sheep shearing, his 30 weeks wages would be £32,250. £2 per sheep for sheep shearing, average 200 a day, would have meant that he would have probably earned in the 5 weeks probably £10,000 for sheep shearing. So Ed's income, £42,000 plus. Eddie's working two long 10-hour days a week at the market, average wages £15 an hour, which would be £300 a week. Eddie would have earned £11,500 or so, and on that, a very low rate of PAYE, and I can't imagine that he's declaring his other income very much. You know, the cost of Linda's shepherd's hut, the patios that he's been doing, and other handyman work. So that's £11,400 added on to the £42,000 that Ed's got. Clara's working part-time in the dairy, average wage £8 an hour, 25 hours a week, that's £200 a week. So she'll have earned £7,600, well under the national insurance and tax threshold. Emma, as we know, has been working in the cafe and various other things for Fallon, and that's without doing Titchy Knob's childcare. So if she was doing 25 hours a week, again, she would have earned about £7,600. And of course, don't forget that Joe's been taking the parking money at £5 a pop for Elf World, the cider club money, and renting out Bartleby on occasions. So a very, very rough estimation showing declared income is going to be somewhere well in excess of £60,000. So if you add in all those other schemes for the badger culling, patio, shepherd's huts, of course they can afford the tenancy of the farm, and which they've already got. Tenancy cost of the farm, incidentally, it's only 50 acres. So it's probably only about £4,000 a year that they're paying to rent the actual farmland. So can they afford the house? Yes, they can.
I got very confused by this. But basically what she's saying is the Grundys will be fine and they can afford it. Although they kind of seem to, you know, when Oliver said, right, you know, we've said that you can stay here. Yes. And even though we said we wanted the farm back, we now don't, and we're allowing you to stay here. Yes, because of your poor old nearly dead dad. Yes, but you are going to have to pay for it. Yes, well, we want some money. Really? And that seemed to be kind of, you know, come as a horrible shock that they would actually be expected to not just say yes, we will pay rent, but actually to pay the rent. Mm. I mean, whenever you start a tenancy agreement, you pay up front, don't you?
You know, I did roll my eyes at this, and
oh, really?
Everybody knows that I'm a big fan of the Grundys, and, you know, it's the class warrior within me and all of that. But come on, did they actually think he was just going to say to them, you can stop there forever for free?
Yeah, whenever.
You know, ultimately, farmers are businessmen. So,
when Caroline was going on about, oh, that's the chaise longue from the half landing, I was thinking, how sodding big is this place? A half landing big enough to put a bloody chaise longue on, and the Grundys are living in it. How much are they paying? They must be paying like a peppercorn rent, and they're still moaning about that.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, blimey, Dad, I wasn't expecting that. Flaming Nora.
For the first time ever, I have somewhat sympathy for your Glenfuller loves and those kind of dum-de-dummers and Archers fans that are a bit like, oh, come on, with the Grundys. You know, I was like, come on. But I tell you what, though, hot news off the Twitters, Lucy. Hot news.
What?
Blue runs only.
Yes.
Right? Guess what he says, right?
I don't know.
Purely coincidental.
Oh, number one, the green.
Yes, I'm betting Titchy Knob is going to reside in number one, the green, very shortly, right now in the middle of the village.
No.
I do hope not.
Will Grundy. Will would, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, he would.
That'd make a lot of sense.
Well, Ellen's always been neurotic, ain't she? I'm happy for him to live there, Dad, with my peculiar accent. Poof.
Then, also hot off the Twitters.
Oh, no, I don't want that. I don't want that.
No, this is good news now.
Oh, okay. Well,
I know you're still referring to the last thing.
Yeah.
But I've moved on. So, Paul Truman.
Yeah.
So, this is brilliant. Thank you, Ian, and thank you. Right? Now, ENS has contributed 100 quid plus 25 gift aid to Refuge. Listen to the dum-de-dum domestic violence special and was so touched. Having listened to the Archers for many years, this seems an appropriate way to say thank you to both shows and to do some good at the same time.
Lovely.
Thank you, Ian S.
Oh, thank you, Ian S.
Yeah, it's very lovely. So, there you go. That's hot off the Twitters. That happened 3 minutes ago. And then Blue Runs Only sent that message about Won the Green 20 minutes ago. He's obviously psychic. He could feel that's what we were talking about.
Yeah.
Mm.
Witherspoon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here, looking out to the sea here in Provincetown. The water is calm, much like the appearance of the River Am and life in Ambridge this past week. But we never know when a tsunami named Rob can strike the village again. We started the week with Justin confirming his job offer to Rob. What the fudge? Sorry for the candy reference, but I'm on Cape Cod, and this sugary confection is as popular in seaside towns on this side of the pond as it is on yours. But seriously, is Justin a competent businessman? He has not shown any indication that he is. More importantly, is he as tone-deaf about issues related to domestic abuse and rape as a certain Republican candidate for president is? I would be surprised if Lillian continues his relationship with him. Kudos to Usha for taking a clear stand against Rob, but I also don't know what Alan was thinking. In fact, has any man in the village outside of Helen's immediate family come forth and condemned Rob? And the week ended with Rob pointing out that he is the only one who understands early childhood development. Of course, Rob, you're the smartest and most talented person I know. Interestingly, Rob made a couple of references to his son, singular, not plural. Is he going to lose interest in Henry? Maybe so, but he also did let us know that he just might start stalking Henry as well. Lastly, Rob gave his mother, the Ambridge villagers, and all of us Dumpty Dummers and other Archers listeners his final chilling warning. He's not going anywhere. Script writers, help us. Two other brief points. First, I would like to videotape Adam and Ian for a class for marital therapists in training. What an example of ineffectual communication between two members of a couple. Secondly, Oliver, you're being played for a chump. Grundy, stop taking advantage of his good nature. Well, that's it for today. Seas remain calm here. Sadly, back to reality tomorrow. Talk to you next week.
Yes, what was Alan thinking? Exactly. And no bloke has actually cut. But then Rob hasn't really showed his face properly in the village, has he? He's kind of kept a low profile, really. He hasn't been to the bull, as far as I know. Hasn't kind of been out and about. But that will be really interesting. I mean, not even Susan's commented yet, has she?
Which I find very hard to believe.
I know. Yeah, it's all a bit odd. And so no bloke has actually come forward and condemned Rob.
How the hell have you conflated me with him?
Because I just popped because the sound quality is really rubbish and I was trying to check that I'd got my thing on the right mic. So it came up with... I brought Skype up to the front and it said Royfield. So I said, I read out the word.
Somewhat unconvincing answer.
Oh, come on. I can't imagine anyone less like Rob than you.
Thank you.
It's not that much for compliment, really, is it? Because, you know, well done, Royfield. You're not a screaming psychopath. Well done. So he reckons
ego like Rob, though.
Is Rob... Is Rob going to lose interest in Henry now?
Well, it seems like he mentioned him, I think, once.
The Gangster, or whatever we're now calling him.
Yeah, he mentioned him once last week.
Arsula said, oh, I miss... What's his name? She said, didn't she?
And yes, when we've had Henry say he misses Daddy, but... I don't really want to comment too much about this storyline because I want to talk about other things. Like, guess what I want to talk about?
The man that said the horrible thing about you.
No, that's coming at the end of the show. All right. Bert. I always think, and I've said this before, whenever you hear Bert, you know that we have a week of the wider characters in the village.
Yeah.
That's what... Because Bert...
It's real Bert out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, Bert tells you that this is a village and everything's fundamentally all right and any storyline with Bert in is of no massive importance. So whenever you hear Bert, I smile and I go, thank heavens for Bert. Love it. Love it, love it, love it. And we had Bert this week. That's all I'm saying.
So... It does feel this week, I'm still sort of, you know, the jam stuff and all that. Mm. It feels lovely to be allowed to be interested in that again.
Absolutely.
Without continually thinking, oh, blimey, what's happening at Blossom Hill? You know, it's sort of, yes, it's a lovely relief. Very nice.
Yeah.
And not feel guilty that I'm not thinking about domestic violence all the time.
But you kind of are, because you're having nightmares about Rob Titchener still.
No, I think we can put that more down to the night nurse than anything else.
Yeah, but why was the ogre in your dream Rob?
Well, because he's the biggest... I don't watch television much and he's the biggest...
You could have said Brexit was chasing you.
How can a really crap decision chase me?
I'm just saying, there are other things that play on your mind, Lucy.
He's the biggest baddie in my life, isn't he? In my subconscious. Clearly. Must be.
You haven't just moved on to the Flower and Produce show.
No, he's clearly still lurking.
He's left deep and lasting mental scars.
Yeah.
Thank you, BBC. Look what you've done to my co-host.
Goddess Diva.
Hey, Dumpty Dumps. Goddess Diva here. And I'm wondering what's happened to Peggy. I mean, we've got this really, really nice woman who's making Emma feel better and talking about the fact that Rob was horrible and abusive and manipulative, like she gets it. What my question is, what have you done with the real Peggy? What have you done with the judgmental cowbag who comes and just changes her will more often, I think, than she changes her underwear and is really bitchy about Chris? Auntie Cardboard is annoying, but she doesn't deserve that. But she's been quite Yeah, so it's weird, because on the one hand, it's been quite nice. On the other hand, I want Peggy back. I want bitchy, nasty Peggy back. So, yeah, that was it for me, really. It's been a good week. It's been a lovely week and really nice to see Friends with Benefits, one-night stand type thing, but where the woman hasn't then fallen madly in love with the man, because Toby and Pip don't count, because they just don't. Yeah. Who wants to think about them? I quite like the idea of Kirsty and Tom back together, but I think he's going to have to work for it, and I think rightly so. All right, enough of my rambling. I've got laundry to do because that is the rock and roll lifestyle of a goddess. So Goddess Diva out.
Yes, Goddess Diva's talking of big, bad, horrible monsters. What has happened to Piggy? She says, Peggy is now being all nice and lovely and reasonable and, you know, saying to Emma, don't worry, dear. I think Peggy probably feels completely duped like everyone else was.
Absolutely.
Everyone else that fell for Rob. Because, I mean, Jennifer was all over him when he first came. Ooh, isn't he nice? Isn't he nice, Brian? La, 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 la. You
know? And there was a part of Peggy that was so happy that a man was going...
Yeah,
exactly.
She's respectable again.
She's respectable, and a man was going to take charge of her, you know, illegitimate sprog.
Yeah.
You know, Peggy's from a completely different generation. And I've always thought Peggy is kind of brilliantly written. It isn't just the fact that as a character, you kind of believe her and you know, and the bits of her which you don't like still completely and utterly make sense. You know, the actress that plays is kind of great too. And it's a woman in her 90s and she still has, you know, foremost, you know, a decent role on this thing.
The character of Peggy left an abusive husband, and yet you know she's unable to spot what's that. She's seeing history repeat itself, and her granddaughter, who, you know, you'd think in a different time, in a different place, in a more enlightened time, would find leaving easier, and didn't.
Mm.
And Peggy didn't help.
No.
Are you sitting on a whoopee cushion or something?
What am I making funny noises?
Yes, you sound like you're on a bouncy castle. Are you now recording from the bouncy castle?
No, I always record... You know this, Lucy. I always record...
on your bed. Have you got a water bed? It's a big rubber water bed.
Yeah, it's my 70s Mr. Lover Man water bed. I'm reclining in my satin bathrobe.
Eating pickled onions or something.
Yes. Pickled onions? Where'd you get that from?
I've no idea.
Anyway... I just think Peggy's awesome, and I kind of like that scene. I thought, you know, this was wise Peggy. This was, you know, the older senior citizen of the village, of the whole drama, basically saying, you know what, don't worry about it too much.
Took us all in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was a good scene.
Yeah.
You got some emails?
No, I haven't.
Because you lost them all?
Because I've lost them.
Well, to be fair, I can't really slag you off because I lost calls last week, didn't I? And I was furiously emailing you saying, have you got that call?
And I was furiously saying, no, because I sent it to you. Yes. So sorry, everybody that rang in or emailed. I thought I had an emailer in, but it turned out to be Goddess Diva who'd email, because she emails in, doesn't she, on the calls.
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
She calls in on the telephone line. Just before we go to an ad break, a couple of things just to wrap up. Order of John Archer. Don't forget, folks, if you have a John in your life, you can nominate them to be John the 13th by quite simply calling in and saying that this person, this John in your life, should have the order of the dearly departed John Archer. On the Twitters... there is a hashtag, which is where do you listen to Dum-de-dum? And quite simply, to join in with that little bit of fun, or you can also do it on Facebook too, you take a picture of where you listen to the Archers or Dum-de-dum, and then you just whack it up there, and other people can see that, and we love all of that. Now, I got my wrists slapped a couple of times in the last 7 days, Lucy V. Freeman. First Ooh. Off, I said that the map idea... belonged to Christina Auckland. It was Roe Roses. She said, actually, Royfield, it was me. And then
she didn't say it like that. Actually, Royfield, it was me.
She did. I could hear that intonation in that tweet.
It's like my children do. Oh, I'm telling.
So, very sorry, Roe Roses. And then also, the woman of the hour, Christina Auckland, said, "Oh, thank you, Royfield, for bigging up the name of my company, you know, to see if I can kind of get any work, but you got the name wrong. So it's cornerstoneslabs.co.uk. So again, if you have any software development that needs to be done, cornerstoneslabs.co.uk. Now, this led on to some very, I think, hilarious kind of tweeting backwards and forwards. And Emily Thomas, ex of Paris, and now of somewhere in London, I believe. Do you remember her, the au pair?
Yes.
Right, awesome. Well, many people were thinking, well, this is basically some kind of hookup map, isn't it? Right, and I think you said the same thing last week.
So it's the Archer's version of Tinder, wasn't it?
Yeah. So people were coming up with names. And I think Emily Thomas came up with Tractor, which, of course, you know, taking off the last vowel, you know. And she says, can we combine that, you know, an image of a tractor with a flame, with some flames behind it? And I think that is absolutely perfect. Yeah. But I reckon, folks, if you can beat Picker without the E, Archer without the E, because I got a sneaky feeling we might get an app out of this. I really do. Because quite a few people, especially on the forum, actually said, Royfield, actually what you need is an app. So, and on that app, I presume, would have the podcast. You could listen to Dumpty Dum. You could see the profiles of other listeners. You could see where these listeners are, so you could arrange kind of meetups. Let's call them meetups and not hookups. And other things besides.
Didn't someone suggest that we just called it Brian?
Yes, which I... which was very good. It was very, very, very good. But anyway, so if you have a software development company and you feel like just, you know, wasting hours creating a dum-de-dum app,
you've just recommended a software development company.
I know, but I don't want Christina's company to. That'd be too much. Well, they can do it if they want, right? But anyway, you can email me and we can talk.
Okay. Don't hold your breath, will you, Roy, to be honest.
And just whilst we're here, we have almost got the cashola that we need to get for the development on the website. And yes, Laura, I know that I went a little bit quiet, but we will attend to the website this week. Jesse's going to get paid. Thank you for everybody who's contributed. We're a tiny bit short. If you want to throw in a few more pennies, awesome. And thank you to everybody who has contributed so far. I will mention you.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
All next week. But first, it's time for a little ad break, and we'll come back the other side with a touch of Millie Bell and Tweets of the Week.
Hello, Dumdy Dummers. Kat Brown here. If you found life in Ambridge a bit stressful of late, a bit lacking in baking competitions and double entendres that don't involve Lillian entering her gentleman's buttonhole, as excellent as that was, then may I make a very polite suggestion. Search for Soggy Bottoms in your podcasting toolkit and you'll head over to a Great British Bake Off fan podcast. In our latest episode, we interview Anna Tregorin herself, actress Aunt Isabel Middleton, about that storyline and her love of buns. So, if that sounds tempting, add us to your iTunes playlist. Even if we moulder away there like that Nutribullet you bought in 2014, we'll still love you very much, especially if you call in via SpeakPipe. On your marks, get set, speak!
When you don't have a roof over your head...
Build that wall. Build that wall.
There was
Build
nothing marked
wall.
Classified Build on my wall. Emails Build either send wall. Or receive.
Build that wall.
I am humbled to have been chosen by the Conservative Party to become its leader.
He said Britain is just a small island that no one pays attention to.
A former colony won the right to determine its own destiny.
Hello and welcome to Mid-Atlantic, the show where we look at the news and the views from one side of the ocean from the perspective of the other.
Do you have a National Trust sticker on your car? Do you think you could be best friends with Kath Kidson? Do you spend hours wandering around the airport looking for an organic quinoa cafe because you refuse to go to Burger King? Then Sarah Smith Cloths offer you. Available from Sainsbury's for the Posher Washer. Proud sponsors of Dumpty Dum.
Good day, everyone. I'm doing this a little bit early this week because I'm trying to escape the football, if I'm honest. So I'm going to take Miss 12 on a little road trip. We're going to go up to Canberra for a few days. I don't know why I'm doing that because it's actually cold up there. So there you go. Now you all know I'm well and truly mental. We have had a really good week on both Facebook and on the forum. And I'd just like to alert you to the fact that Witherspoon, who is obviously a very busy person in your life, as well as being our fabulous on-call psychiatrist and psychologist, is very active on the forum. And he is really generous with his time if someone asks a specific question. So if you would like to know more about what makes people work, I really recommend you get on there and have a look at what he's already written. And if you have a question, a burning question, I'm sure he'll answer it. So thank you to Witherspoon for that. So if you go on to dumptydum.com/forums, you will find that someone's talking about whether there is a cure for the behaviours that Rob has, which was started by Claire Howard, and Julian Kelly has started a conversation about how often people are listening to The Archers. I would very much like to thank people for two things on the Facebook page. First of all, as you know, we did have to ask for some money because we have been under cyber attack, which sounds more exciting than it is. And people have really stepped up and helped, and we just ask you for a little bit, and you've done that largely, so thank you so much. We also had a shout out for women to read some comments from Paul Truman's Just Giving page. And that was largely done on Twitter, but we put the shout out on Facebook, and you wonderful people have assisted with that as well. Really love, I know we've all said this many times, but I really love the Dumpty Dum community. It surprises me sometimes that I don't actually know you, because I feel like I do. On the Facebook page, we also discussed something that made me so angry at the time. Was when Helen wanted to drive Henry to school and Pat put her off, and I was incensed. I thought, is this not exactly the behaviour she's been putting up with from Rob? What we need to do is encourage her. A nicer way might have been maybe to say, oh, what a great idea. Yeah, I'll come with you if you like and we'll do blah, blah afterwards, just to kind of give her some support. But no, we just said, oh, do you think you should be doing that? So cross. So I asked that question. Andrew Horn suggested that the difference is she genuinely believes she's being protective, unlike Rob. That's true. Good point. But we can't smother people, I guess, would be my suggestion. And Andrew suggested a halfway house would be for someone in the family to ride shotgun for a week in case she panics and to give moral support in case she runs into Rob. I hope you mean just run into Rob metaphorically rather than with a car, although I like your thinking, Andrew. Laura Hobbs Sison said, that made me furious, to be honest. After all Helen has been through, she needs confidence in her abilities and a push to stand on her own two feet. It was stupid of Pat to do that. Becky Land said, I think we will see this issue reoccur in the coming months as Helen will struggle to gain her confidence while her family smother her due to her late onset guilt. Helen's mental health could well suffer. I think Ian should invite her into his and they raise the boys together. He's got the space now, I suppose. He will give her the space and independence and he gets children as he has always wanted them. Rachel Louise said it was ridiculous how many people stopped driving at all after a minor bump. Liz Figure says she's got an idea. Ian rent number one the green of William Grundy and take Helen as a lodger or vice versa. There does seem to be a lot of support for Helen and Ian living together, so look out, Adam. This may be the way it resolves and not the way you wanted. I raised the question, this conversation between Usha and Alan I thought was very odd, like really odd. So I asked I understood it was a dramatic plot point, but nevertheless I just thought it just sounded ridiculous. They didn't sound like a married couple at all. So quite a conversation on there. D. Leary, I'm grumpy at Alan. I get he's all godly and stuff, but Rob raped and terrorised Helen and caused psychological damage to Henry. He needs to be a bit more Old Testament, go a bit medieval on his ass. I love that. So lots more like that. So if you'd like to get involved, you know where to find us. And until then, hooroo!
Thank you, Millie. That was most awesome. As always, Lucy, hit us with those tweets.
Ha! Yes, right. Emily Jane. This was about the Joe's birthday party. She said, are they playing Knees Are Good? That's a brave choice for a 95th birthday party. Yes, the music was absolutely extraordinary. JB again said, continuity announcer. Tonight, Rob will face a problem. Whole Archer's audience. Good!
Stop there, Lucy. Girl. Sorry, love. I need to put in my charger. My thing's on 4%. I didn't notice it. Okay. I didn't have a charge. 1 minute.
My sheesh? Are you being good? All right. I've got chills, they're multiplying. And I'm losing control. Cause the power you're supplying, it's electrifying. You better shape up, cause I need a man, and my heart is set on you. You better shape up, you better understand. Do 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 do. You're the one of the ones, you are the one that do do do, honey. You're the one of the ones, you are the one that do do do, the one I need. Oh, yes, indeed. Dum, 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 ba do dum, dum.
Alright, Lucy.
Can we leave that in? Because I think the Dumpty Dum audience needs to hear you singing that you need a man. Is that your charging up song?
It is.
The power you're supplying. Is that what
yeah,
you're singing?
Yeah, because it's okay. Definitely electrifying.
Right. Furnace Girl said about when Tom's doing his Nuffield application.
Mm.
She said, you'll be asked about your previous experience. Well, there's shagging supermarket buyers. Yes, he didn't quite. Exeter Dormouse. That this is the Joe leaving Grange Farm, possibly. Is this like the beginning of Casualty and we have to guess how Joe will die? Is it the salad dressing? Is it a subsiding farm? Yes, I do. When he conked out on that chaise long, I thought, that's it, he's dead. He's dead on the chaise long. Oh, no, he's awake. No, it's fine. Becky Black Books. I said, on behalf of Dumpty Dum, have we got anybody willing to do the operation on Rob? and make sure he never comes round. And she said, oh dear, look, we've left a clamp inside and some gauze and a scalpel. We lost the trolley, the anaesthetist lunch and my keys. And now we have tweet of the week. John Reed, this was from. Mm-hmm. He had Rob saying, as soon as I get rid of this wretched bag, I'll be a whole man again. And Arsula saying, please stop calling me that, Robert.
That's very good. Very good.
That's it.
Well done. You know what? We needed a short show after last week, didn't we?
Not a shit show, a short show.
Well, I don't know, Luce. Some short people, yeah, exactly. That's what we've delivered up. But let's just rattle through the credits, shall we? Before we come on to the review of all reviews, dumdydum.com is where you can find us. And if you're a nostalgic person, you might want to go over there kind of pronto and look at it before it all starts to change, folks, because we're gonna upgrade it. So dumdydum.com. But whether you want to do that kind of like now or next week or the week after, we'll always have www.com/shop, because I know some folks are buying stuff on there, and maybe next week I'll get round to actually finding the correct login details to see who's been ordering what from the shop, and we can just give you props for that. So www.com if you want to have a mug with our logo on it, or a t-shirt, or a baby grow, or just whatever the heck. It's all on www.com/shop. Now iTunes reviews, because you good people have been writing reviews like there's no tomorrow. We've been going well up the iTunes podcast charts for the category UK film and TV. Specifically this week, we want to thank
Helen O'Neill, who said, I listen in the car on the long drive to and from work.
I laugh along with it and listen to the other caller inners.
Sarah Sari said, funny, generous and a great community.
I love Royford and Lucy to bits and all of their Dummy Dumb caller inners. A guilty pleasure. We have.
Can I just say that I did not want Royfield to read this one, because I do not see how I think this is rotten. But anyway, he overruled me, and now I'll edit that bit out, so you'll never know that I even said
it. No, because that I'm going to leave it in, because I think that is a fair and understandable response. But I do think, as brutal as this email, as this review is. You know, we do generally thank people for writing reviews in, and if somebody has criticism, we should acknowledge that also. So this review goes as like this. This show has its moments. If you can get past Royfield's huge ego and astonishingly repetitive, often not very articulate musings on the Archers and life. Too much about life, actually. Stick to talking about the Archers, as is the remit of the show. The people calling in are obviously fans. The two hosts are less convincing. They struggle sometimes to remember fairly basic plot details, though Lucy has a warmth and humour that becomes more endearing over time. How it can be described as having clean lyrics is beyond me. There's frequent swearing and a lot of toilet and smutty humour a lot of toilet and smutty humour that surely must rate it 15 or 18 plus iTunes. Presumably, this and the fact that the show is highly critical of the Archers and its writing team must be the reason why the BBC won't allow its cast to appear. Whew. So, I don't think this person was sitting on the fence, really. I think, you know, Well, that's the reason why I want, you know, I decided to read this out. So, because you obviously do listen to Dumdy Dum and listen through gritted teeth. Now, if it's that bad,
why?
I have some good news for you. You don't have to listen.
No, it's great. You can just turn it off.
However,
I invite you,
and I really do, to come on the show. And we'll even do a bit...
I don't.
Listen, but we've done interviews solo before. Mm-hmm. So... if you want to email me, and anyone can find my email, it's hardly the world's biggest secret. It's just royfield@gmail.com, I don't mind saying. You can just email me and we'll arrange an interview. Yes, I do have a little bit of an ego. And yes, I do this show invariably without notes, so maybe on times I'm quite repetitive. And as I said to Lucy before we started, Miss Malaprop was a member of my family, so I do mangle the English language. And last week I kept on saying wouldn't of instead of wouldn't have. And thank you for the person that not only tweeted that I did such a thing, but also edited me saying that three times and put it up on SoundCloud and gave me the link. But it was just very funny. I think it was done in kind of in good spirit. So, you know what? I might have a big ego, but I can certainly take the piss out of myself. I don't think I'm that perfect. But anyway, moving on to other points in your scathing review. Now, you said that there's too much talk about life. And actually, we should stick to the remit, which is talking about the Archers. Now, that's the bit where you're completely and utterly wrong. Who gave us the remit other than me? So, quite frankly, I kind of do what I want. However, I fully admit that at times we have overstepped the mark. Me going off about Brexit was definitely a stretch too far for some listeners. But again, there is no broadcaster that is regulating us. There is nobody saying we can do anything or we can't do anything. And I think the best podcasts are the podcasts where there are some kind of there is a chemistry. There's obviously a friendship and a warmth between the two hosts, and they're you, the listener, because podcasting, listen to podcasts anyway, such an intimate thing. You glean bits about your hosts and you feel that you know them, that they become friends. And so it is deliberate that I talk about random little bits of history. And, you know, and Lucy talks about her pets. Though, admittedly, Lucy's much more circumspect about, you know, revealing too much about her personal life than I am. But what I would say is that for the most part, people seem to get it. We're a podcast, not a radio show. Now, as for saying that people calling in are fans, yes, they are. But the two hosts are, are less so. I keep on calling you a mister. In my head, you are a bloke. And I don't know if you are male or female. But I would say my fan
male.
I would say that my fan bona fides are out there. Because for the last 2.5 years, each week, I've been recording or editing a podcast about the Archers. So I don't think anybody can say I'm not a fan. But what I am not is an obsessive. And I would say that one of the reasons why I generally just have very thin notes and then just kind of talk off the top of my head is so that there is a clear difference between Lucy and I. So I am generally kind of more broad brushstrokes, and I talk about the plotting of this, and I think I have done in this episode, in terms of Tom and Kirsty and it making sense in terms of the plotting of the drama of these two characters, as opposed to remembering that Darrington played Ambridge last week in, you know, and who won the single wicket last year. So I'm sorry, that's the one bit of this where I'll stick me two fingers up to you and say I am a fan because I produce this podcast, right? But I'm not an obsessive. So, you know, I can see where you're coming with that, but you're wrong. In terms of the toilet humour and language, a few weeks back, I did actually kind of bleep out some of the swear words within the show. So I know that is an issue for some people. And I know it's definitely more of an issue for Americans than it is for us Brits, that we can use the F word a little bit more judiciously and than they do. I do think you have a point, though. As I've said to one or two people before on the Twitters, toilet humour is British humour.
It's what made this country great, for crying out loud.
Yeah, that and international slavery and conquering half the planet.
Apart from that.
Yeah, exactly. So
slavery and bum jokes, that's it.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. And I know that our transatlantic cousins, you know, say, there's British people being a little bit twee and peculiar again. But it's kind of British, and if you don't like it, you don't like Britain. So I'd question your patriotism. Seriously, I think GCHQ and MI5 need
someone notify Tebbit at once.
Exactly. I think GCHQ needs to be monitoring your email communications, because to be against toilet humour,
Yeah.
Anyway, jokes aside, I do have a little bit of an ego. I would say who doesn't? But you know what? It's kind of, it was my idea to do this. And the great news is you don't have to listen. If you want to come on the show, you know what? Doors open. You know, pick up the phone and say, this is me. You can even just leave a message if you don't want to come on the show and actually have a little bit of a chat about this. The other thing that I would say is that I'm incredibly proud of the community that Lucy and I have created. And I would say that us having guests on, the amount of calls, last week's show was so long because we have a community of listeners and we include every call. You know, if I was some dictatorial ego freak, we wouldn't be doing that. So what we have done is to help foster a certain type of Archers listener who likes a little bit of naughty humour, but is, I would say, intelligent, is articulate, and we have our own kind of special niche in terms of Archer listenerdom. And I don't think I walk around saying people should do this and should do that, and it's the Royfield Brown show. Though I talk crap from time to time, and for the most part, people seem to understand that that is all part of the eccentric kind of nature of our show. But you're proving me right that I am inarticulate, because I can't get my words out. So didn't say everything that you said was without any kind of basis or merit. Now, you know what to do, Mr. Person. If you would like to help keep our little show on the road, dear listener, there's two ways this can be done. We have been doing a little bit of fundraising for the last 2 weeks, and we're almost up at this figure that I need to give Jesse. So if you've got a few more quid, dollars, rupees, or shekels, if you're from Israel, in your wallet, in your purse, you can donate. You can help us by hitting that donate button on the site, or
you can go to patreon.com, search for Dumpty Dum, and you can donate $2 a show, which is about £1.50.
To remember to get in contact with us, you can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe on our site, or you can call us on 0203-031-3105 to leave us a telephonic message. And special thanks need to go out to Nicholas Barnes of Vitel, who have kind of co-sponsored this week's show, because they're the company behind that telephone number, and they've given us that service gratis for some 2.5 years. So big thumbs up to you,
Nick. Thank you.
On social media, specifically the Twitters, you can find us, we're at DumDeeDum. Me, I'm at Royfield. So if you want to pull me up about my malapropisms, about my general inarticulateness, or just general fuckwittery, whoops, you can tweet me at R-O-I-F-I-E-L-D at Royfield. Harriet is at Shambridges.
And Sarah Smith is at Sarah_Smith. And I am at Lucy V. Freeman.
On the Book of Face, where we have 1,400 like lurkers, you can just go there, do some stuff, hang out with other people that just want to talk about the Archers and occasionally Dum-Dee-Dum as well. So well done, Millie Bell, for Martian, all of that. Lucy V. Freeman, is there anything you would like to say before we go?
Yes, there is. Please, thank you. Go. I made some cheese. I went on a cheese-making course.
Mm-hmm.
Because and I've made a cheese. I've made a soft cheese and a hard cheese and a blue cheese.
Mm-hmm.
And I have called the soft cheese, because that's my favorite sort of cheese, Solidarity with Helen.
Ah.
So it is in my fridge,
mm-hmm,
bouldering away like bilio, which is apparently what it's supposed to do, although I'm a bit unclear about that. And I have to wash it in various things, and mm-hmm, then I can eat it, and I will take a photo of it, so people can see my solidarity with Helen cheese. And cheese making is really hard, can I just say. It is extremely physical, and you're hauling massive great buckets of stuff around, and it's the temperature. You have to be so careful, because if it gets too hot, it kills it, and if it gets too cold, it stops working. It's very, very complicated. So I was very impressed with Helen for producing consistent. And apparently the man said your personality comes out in the cheese that you make because it's kind of the conditions that you're in when you make it and everything. And it was all really interesting, actually.
Mm.
There we are. I've shut up about cheese
now. Awesome. Well done. I've just gone onto Facebook. And I thought for a moment, I genuinely thought this, that there was a new kind of status on Facebook. Because I read this as, Linda still likes Dum-de-dum. I thought, oh, so you've liked it, and after a certain amount of time, you still like it. But her name genuinely is Linda Still. I thought, oh, that's really nice of you, Linda. You still like us. But it's a capital S. Well done, Linda Still. Right then, I think that's a perfect.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Time for us to say and bid you farewell. Toodle pip.
Bye.
Cool. That's a nice little short one this week.
Yeah, good.